Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, as I mentioned last week, I was in Los Angeles, California for the running of the Long Beach Grand Prix. So I've got some news and some sounds to share with you from that. We'll also talk about what happened last weekend in NASCAR as Kyle Larson attempted to run three separate NASCAR races all in the same weekend and win all three of those. We'll see how he did. I've got a cool story about the Excalibur car. I don't, it's kind of an unusual car we'll talk a little bit about. Of course, we'll talk about some weird and unusual automotive news. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. The pages of Racer magazine, the headline says, Kirkwood vaults to another Long Beach victory. Well, the 50th running of the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach saw pole sitter Kyle Kirkwood lead the field of 27 drivers and 11 teams with ease to score his third career IndyCar Series victory and the second at his home track for Honda Racing Corporation USA. The Andretti Global driver put an epic lap to take the pole and was flawless throughout the race as he sustained constant pressure from current championship leader Alex Palou. Kirkwood wheeled his number 27 Honda home with a win of 2.5 seconds over Palou and in the number 10 Chip Ganassi Racing Honda, as well as very clear of Alec Arrow McLaren's Christian Lundgaard, Meyer Shank's really Racing's Felix Rosenquist, who sealed up three of the top four for Honda. Yeah, it was a really good weekend, Kirkwood said. To win here on the 50th anniversary and the 50th running of the race, and Acura as a sponsor with Honda, it was a flawless weekend. Now, Palou got a little close on a couple occasions, but never really appeared to have an outright pace to challenge Kirkwood. Super happy to be here, Palou said, whose season is opened with finishes of first, and second. I think it's been a great weekend. We really didn't have the ultimate speed that the number 27 car had. Kyle did an awesome job throughout the weekend. He was managing every pace. Every time I was having a small chance, just a little bit to get close, I just couldn't keep up. So wish we made it a little bit more interesting from the fans, but super happy to be here. The overcast turned blue skies on a relatively cool event set in 68-degree weather was absolutely packed with fans on the 1.9-mile, 11-turn road course situated in Southern California. Now, some of the biggest movers in the lead group was Arrow McLaren's Christian Lundgaard, who went against the strategy by starting on the Firestone primary tires, only one of six drivers to do, and he was also rewarded by vaulting from 12th to 3rd. Team Penske's driver Will Power was 5th. His teammate Scotty McLaughlin finished in 6th, giving Chevrolet some of the spoils at Long Beach. In 7th was Kirkwood's teammate Colton Herta, who persevered through the race, wasn't delighted about moving rearward 5 positions after starting on the front row. I'd love to have liked to have been able to be in the fight with Alex and Kyle at some point in time, Christian Lundgaard said, but I started too far back. Obviously, we made a completely different strategy from both of them, and our strategy ended up with a podium from 12th. The greatest move forward was delivered by AJ Foyt Racing Santino Ferrucci, who started dead last and went on to finish in 11th. Arrow McLaren's Nolan Siegel awoke with a suspected food poisoning and received fluids prior to the race and fought back and finished in 20th. Among the other highlights was Stingray Robb, running the same strategy as Lundgaard, led 12 laps and impressed on his way to a career-best tying finish for 9th for Junkos Hollander Racing. It was the second race to go caution-free. Let's talk a little bit about Stingray Robb, the young man who's on his third team right now, and he's running for, had run for AJ Foyt, now he's running for Junkos Hollander. The headline says, Robb on the rebound with assist from coach's input. Well, late in the opening round of the Fox IndyCar season at St. Petersburg, Stingray Robb was featured on the Fox broadcast for all the wrong reasons. Barked at by the announcers for getting in the way of the leaders who were trying to put him one lap down and had to settle for contest without interference, Robb eventually moved aside and ambled home to an unremarkable 21st finish. Two races later, it was Robb turning laps that were in line with the best drivers in the field and running in the top 10 with the Fox cameras trained on his car while leading the race for 12 laps. Using the same strategy as Arrow McLaren's Christian Lundgaard, 9 positions forward from 12th to 3rd, while Rob improved by 10 positions, motoring from 19th at the start of the race and finishing in 9th at the checkered flag. From a in-the-back marker on March 2nd to a legitimate leader and contender on April 13th, Junkos Hollinger Racing driver answered his critics in the best way. Rob is by no means a finished product in his third IndyCar season, but he's keenly aware of how much progress he has made in order to be among the best in the field. It's recognition of this fact and a healthy level of humility that Rob draws on his quest to improve. Seeking help through renowned racing and driver coach Rob Wilson has been the most beneficial for Rob. Between visiting England and receiving lessons directly from the former professional race car driver assigned to him, named Adam Carroll, on his timing stand, the 23-year-old has started to reap the benefits of his new education plan. Yeah, last week, the week before Long Beach, I was over in England, Rob told Racer Magazine after climbing out of his car on Sunday. People thought I was on vacation, but I wasn't. I was working with my driver coach, Rob Wilson, an amazing guy, and I've got a great group around me. I am so thankful, and this is no doubt for the reason I have had some of the success I've had. Now, Wilson's students in the past have been everyone from a young Juan Pablo Montoya, who won the Indy 500 two times, also ran in NASCAR as well as Formula One and won races in both of those series. Also helping young Marco Andretti to his best season ever in 2013, where he finished in fifth place. If anything, the willingness to employ Rob and Carroll might help recalibrate the perception that people have for him, having changed to his third IndyCar team in three seasons. The driver needs to improve, and he has a great foundation. A return to Junkos Hollinger, which he won the 2020 USF Pro 2000 Championship, has been the first step forward in creating a stable base to learn and grow at the IndyCar level. I don't know why you wouldn't want to bring coaches in. Iron sharpens iron, he said, and that's why I've tried to surround myself with the right people. I just got lucky to have these guys with me today. A great group from different points in my career, winning championships with Junkos Hollinger, and I knew what I was coming back to. I have a high level of commitment. They have a high passion, which is super high, and we're going to keep going. I don't see there's any limit for us, and I don't even think we've hit our potential. There's more to come, and that's what makes me excited. So this young 23-year-old driver is starting to make some serious growth on his career, and a lot of people commented, my friends, last weekend, did you see how well Stingray Rob ran last weekend? And they said, yeah. So congratulations on the Stingray. Keep moving forward. As we continue to talk about the Long Beach Grand Prix that I attended last weekend, the headline says, Long Beach confirms attendance record. Well, the 50th anniversary of the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach is complete, and the final figures are in. The three-day celebration was indeed the largest since Champ Car and IndyCar merged back in 2008. Eclipsing the record of last year at 194,000 fans, the 2025 edition moved north of 200,000 attendees, according to the Grand Prix Association of Long Beach, for the event which Porsche Penske Motorsports captured its third IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship win on Saturday, and Andretti Global's Kyle Kirkwood dominated on Sunday for his first IndyCar season victory of this season. We're delighted with the entire Acura Grand Prix weekend turned out, and that's according to the president of the association. This was the most complicated schedule of events that our normal weekend of activities overlaid with a specific 50th anniversary commemorations, further enhanced by special recognition of our first responders of the January Southern California wildfires. All these events came off as planned thanks to the efforts of the Grand Prix team, volunteers, partners, in the city of Long Beach and its staff. Now we can focus on creating another exciting weekend with our new partners, Penske Entertainment, for our next race, which will be April 17th through the 19th, 2026. Well, as I mentioned, I was blessed to be able to go to this race. It was a quick one. Flew over on Saturday morning, got to the track in time to see the qualifications and then the race in the afternoon, which was the sports car race, the IMSA race, which was incredible. And I'm going to play a little bit of sound for you right now to talk about that race. So one of the things that makes that race so unique is the fact that it has multiple different styles of cars with different kinds of engines. So first, I'm going to play what an Indy car sounds like. And then after that, I'm going to play you a compilation of cars going by my position, and you'll hear different sounds and different tonations of these cars. I mentioned this first car, these are actually the Indy cars. So this is the big race that we went to attend. So as you can hear, those sounds are a little more high-pitched. Now, when we start talking about the sports car race, well, you'll hear a group of different sounds, and they'll be a lot more diverse. All right, here are the sports car sounds. So even right there at the end, you could hear that one car, which was much higher pitched. So that's one of the things that I loved about the sports car races, the fact that we have so many different styles of race cars on the same track at the same time. But overall, it was a great weekend. Appreciate my friend Doug and I am. Doug coming with me. And we were able to see the rock band Foreigner play on Saturday night after all the festivities. The weather was gorgeous, a little cool and cloudy in the morning, but around noon to 2 o'clock, skies opened up and it was a beautiful Southern California weekend. And the event was flawless. And once again, folks, my second favorite race on the circuit besides the Indy 500, which is going to be coming up rather shortly. I'm looking forward to heading out to Indiana in May, and I'll have certainly a lot of stuff to talk about when we get there. We're going to leave the world of IndyCar right now and jump into the collector car world. And this is from the pages of Hemmings. And this is the Independent Thinking column by Pat Foster. It's The Legend of Excalibur. Well, I don't exactly know which was the first replica, and it was a good chance it was Brooks Stevens' Excalibur. And if I'm wrong about this, well, please let me know. I enjoy being corrected by the gotcha crowd. Well, the car became the Excalibur, debuted early in 1964 as the Studebaker SS during the New York Auto Show. Industrial designer Stephen Brooks, under contract to revamp the Studebaker passenger car line, created it to draw attention to the Studebaker stand. The crowd responded at the Chicago Auto Show just prior had been very disappointing. So while the explanation is probably true, I can't help wonder if Stevens wanted to explore the idea of starting a specialty automotive company, building a rendition of one of his favorite cars, the awesome 1928 to 1932 Mercedes-Benz SSK. It's kind of the sort of thing that I might have done. In any event, when Studebaker's management saw the car shortly before the New York Auto Show, they were disappointed. They didn't see any point in displaying a Mercedes-Benz replica whose only connection to Studebaker was its chassis and its drivetrain. Unabashed, Steven rented a separate display space and displayed the car. The rest, they say, is history. The car was an enormous hit. One admiring Chevy dealer even promised to sell copies through his New York City dealership if Stevens would produce them with Chevrolet components. Other dealers soon made similar offers, and it was the beginning of a small but successful dealer network. Unsolicited orders began to arrive, including one from actor Tony Curtis. When the General Motors executive and friend Ed Cole offered to supply Chevrolet drivetrains, Stevens accepted the offer, and the company SS Automobiles was born. Stevens renamed the Roadster the Excalibur SS, designed with a sword and chrome loop hood ornament when Mercedes-Benz wouldn't allow them to use their three-pointed star. For production model, Stevens kept the Daytona frame but switched to a Chevrolet drivetrain, which he was able to purchase with an impressive supplier from the original Mercedes-Benz outside exhaust pipes. Now, Stephen's sons, David and William, who helped him build the prototype, led the new venture. The early decision to make the body out of fiberglass was rather than the aluminum, which was what was used in the prototype. The Excalibur styling wasn't an exact replica of the Mercedes-Benz SSK, but a similar lean and powerful and almost menacing look. The most notable difference was the height. The original vehicle was much taller and rode on larger wheels. Power came from a 327 cubic inch 300 horsepower V8, slightly more than the original prototype's 290 horsepower, hooked up with a 4-speed transmission, making this essentially a Corvette with a retro body. Weighing reportedly only 2,100 pounds, and its performance was outstanding. Stephen's test said the Excalibur was able to accelerate to 60 miles an hour in under 5 seconds and with a top speed of 160 miles per hour. The Daytona's 109-inch wheelbase allowed Stephens to set the V8 back 28 inches, providing room for a long hood. The setback engine helped improve handling. To retain an authentic look, Stephen included cycle fenders and a doorless cockpit. Fenders were produced from a single form, then trimmed by hand for front and rear placement. Price? All of this for $6,000. A short option list included a radio and a heater. And neither much was really offered after that. Before that. Now, more exciting options was the Paxson supercharger, which boosted the horsepower of the V8 to 450 horsepower. Original Excaliburs only offered a 2-seat roadster, but Stevens decided to add more models, and the roadster with doors and full fenders was the second model, and due to customer request, a 4-door passenger version. Excalibur rode the retro phase right until the end. Later additions offered more comforts as the gold chain crowd became enthusiastic buyers. The company closed in 1986 when sales dropped off, but then was revamped by new owners, and the last Excalibur was built in 1997. Let's talk a little NASCAR news, and the headline reads, Larson dominates in an emotional Cup Series victory at Bristol. We did it for John. For the second straight day at Bristol Motor Speedway, Kyle Larson dominated a NASCAR race and dedicated the victory to his friend and PR representative John Edwards, who had passed away suddenly during the week leading up to the races at Bristol Motor Speedway. On Sunday, Larson, who won the Food City 500 NASCAR Championship race in overwhelming fashion, leading 411 of the 500 laps and sweeping both stages. The victory was Larson's second of the season and his second on the half-mile high-banked short track and the 31st of his career. It came one day after the number 5 Hendrick Motorsports driver ran away with the NASCAR Xfinity race at Thunder Valley as well. This one is definitely for John, Larson said, who finished second in Friday night's NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, one spot short of sweeping the entire weekend. He's just one great guy. Successful. It was a successful weekend here. Wish he was here to celebrate with us in person, but we know he is here in spirit. Just flawless race once again here at Bristol for the number 5 team. A really, really good car. It was a lot of fun. Now, Larson, who brushed the outside wall at the apex of turns 1 and 2 with 5 laps left in the race without consequence, finished 2.5 seconds in front of Joe Gibbs Racing driver Denny Hamlin, who fell one spot short of his third straight Cup victory, as Hamlin won the two previous races. And Hamlin's teammate Ty Gibbs finished 6 seconds back in third in a race that ran without caution over the final 235 laps. However, many of those green laps we ran out there were a lot of fun, Larson said. He was pretty comfortable with things. Denny came on strong before that pit cycle and kept the pressure on me. After the final pit stops, Hamlin could close within a second of Larson in traffic, but was never a threat to take the lead. You have to give them their due in a dominant performance, Hamlin said. They looked pretty flawless for that team. It looked pretty easy. I have to give it to them. I'm glad we were able to give them a little bit of a run with our progressive Toyota. But this weekend, we're all thinking about the John Edwards family, who was a racing journalist and PR guy. Al Stewart, who was a team owner. And Shiggy Hattori, all of them passed away in the last 8 days. We've lost a lot of great people over our sport in 1 week. Wish we could have gotten just one more spot closer, but he was just a little bit too much to handle. Hamlin and Larson finished 1-2 on 7 occasions in the past. Sunday's race was the first time that Larson had come out on top in that situation. Well, Ryan Blaney ended up finishing in third position as he ran 175 laps on one set of tires, which was incredible. Chase Briscoe came home in fourth as Joe Gibbs Racing claimed the three positions behind Larson. Blaney ran the longest and the green flag lap, as I said. Pole runner Alex Bowman led the first 39, but then ended up finishing in the end of the pack because his engine had expired. So a emotional victory for Kyle Larson after losing his PR guy, John Edwards, but a big weekend for that team as he finished in second in the truck race, first in the Xfinity race, and first in the Cup race. In unusual automotive news, it says one Audi A6 has racked up $57,000 in speeding fines since 2024. Well, there's a black Audi A6 that can't seem to stop running speeding through Brooklyn. Its driver has accumulated 563 speeding camera violations in school zones last year alone, according to Transportation Alternatives, a public transit advocacy group. The site compiled the list of the top 10 school zone speeders across New York City. They're all drivers of pretty much ordinary cars, and less than half of them were made up by luxury or sporty rides. In fact, the worst offender was the one in the four-ringed sedan, better known as Audi. In addition to the Audi's 563 tickets in 2024, he's already received 177 this year. Its owner reportedly paid $46,000 of these fines today, but still owes an additional $11,000 in fines. All the speeding was done in Brooklyn, and they were caught on cameras on Ocean Park and Ocean Court. It doesn't say what kind of Audi A6 it is, whether it's a 2-liter turbo or a 3-liter V6. It really doesn't matter because you don't need that much power to blast through a school zone. The Audi owner isn't the only one shelling out big bucks. Number two on the list is a 2015 Mercedes 300, was flagged by school zones 474 times in 2024, but this year, none. The driver isn't willing to pay as much, owing $47,000 in fines, and has only forked over $3,000 so far, and his violations were all in Manhattan. Well, the group of cars, as we said, Audi A6 was number one, a Mercedes 300 was number two, a Mercedes CL-Class was three, and then a Kia Forte and a Pacifica and a Range Rover and a Kia Forte and a Chevy Suburban and a Camry and a taxi. These are all the top 10 cars speeding through school zones in New York. That is weird and unusual automotive news for sure. In some quick Formula One news, they are racing in Saudi Arabia this weekend, and Max Verstappen is on the pole, and Lando Norris crashed out during qualifications and will be starting in the 10th position. So Max Verstappen on the pole with Oscar Piastri starting in second, George Russell third, Charles Leclerc will start in fourth, and I'll have the results of the Formula One race for you next weekend. Well, time to talk gas prices with our friends at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3.15. Here in Arizona, $3.34. New Mexico, $2.85. Colorado, $3.07. Utah, $3.30. Nevada, $3.89. And California, $4.83. Texas, oh yeah, 270 in Texas. Oklahoma, 272. All right, let's see what's going on here with our local gas prices here in Arizona. Well, amazing enough, if you get out of the metro, you can find some pretty cheap gas. The Love's Travel Stop in Eloy at 259. The Express Fuel in Eloy at 259 as well. Head on down to Casa Grande, the Arco Station, 259. The Fast Trip at 263. And oh, how about this? Winslow, 267, and that's at the 76 station in Winslow. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. Get a little closer to the metro, you're going to find the cheapest gas down in Maricopa. Circle K's, Quick Trip, Fry's, those are all at $2.99. And how about this? In the Zone gas station on North Scottsdale Road in Tempe at $2.99. The Circle K on North Scottsdale Road is at 304. And you can find some inexpensive gas at the Costco station and Waddell Road in Surprise at 309. Yesterday at Walmart in Scottsdale, I paid 344. Well, folks, we've reached that time. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I recently took my car to a nationally known company to have my tires balanced and rotated. I was told that my tires were nearly 10 years old, and once they passed that threshold, the company could no longer legally service my tires. Is there a law that I don't know about to back up their claim? We all know that materials break down, glue doesn't last forever, but 10 years seems to be a pretty short time, especially with the recent advances in technology and materials in tire production. And that's from Ron. Well, there's no law that forbids them from working on your tires, but their lawyers may forbid it. Tires are made of rubber, and despite the advances in tire technology, rubber does degrade over time, and whether the tires are still turning or they're just sitting still. I'm sure you've once tried to use an old, dried out rubber band and had it snap. Well, the rubber in the tires also dries out and gets brittle and inflexible over time. This is due to the rubber's interaction with the ozone in the air and the baking of the effect by the sun. There's really no hard and fast rule or law about when tires go out of age, but most shops put it somewhere between 6 and 10 years. And 10 years seems to be the outside of that date. So I'm sure that this shop's lawyer said, look, if you rotate Ron's 10-year-old tires, and then a month later, he has a blowout. And from the blowout, he crashes into a watermelon stand. And then from crashing into the watermelon stands, he gets a pit stuck in his nose, and he could sue us for that. After all, we were the last people to service the tires. And the court could conclude that we implied that the tires were safe, because we service them. So guess what? We don't service any tires that are over 10 years old. Now, and the sales manager at this tire shop probably said, that sounds like a great idea to me. It'll give us more reasons to sell tires. Now, I don't think that's really the driving motivation here, Ron. Even though the tires may still have tread on them, and the rubber may be getting cracked and inflexible, which increases the likelihood of a sidewall blowout at high speeds. And if the car was barely driven and always garaged, and its tires would probably last a little bit longer than the tires that sat in the driveway all of its life. But at 10 years, either way, it's probably time for some new tires. Well, I totally agree. I shop at a big name tire company called the Discount Tire, and they have that same rule. And I think their rule now is 8 years. It started out as 10. And definitely something that you want to make sure that your tires are correct and they are not out of date. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.